Welcome to the latest episode of The Independent. I'm Pete Sampson, joined as always by my co-host Matt Fortuna. And Matt, since our last show, I was in a courtyard in El Paso. The college football season ended. The greatest college coach of all time retired. As we record this, the weirdest college football coach in modern times may be leaving for the NFL. It's been an incredibly newsy college football January, and yet Notre Dame somehow has managed to avoid it. Knock on wood under my table here. But yeah, and you got a really nice front row seat for that Rose Bowl between Michigan and Alabama, which I think that was the last time we recorded. You were about to go to Media Day and talk to Tommy Rees and Tyler Buchner about it. So a lot has happened in college football. I don't even know where you want to start with that.
I mean, it's funny you mentioned all that, and I know this is a college football podcast, but the greatest NFL coach of all time also is out of a job. Pete Carroll, one of the few to win at both levels, also out of a job as we speak. A lot has happened. Yeah, a lot. Pete Pavakwa is going to officially assume AD duties on March 25th. Ross Dellinger reported that this week from Yahoo. That's about the only like Notre Dame related stuff, at least right now. But the domino effect of Nick Saban's retirement, which, you know, in and of itself is as big of an offseason story as you'll ever get. It's pretty crazy, right? I mean, multiple sitting head coaches have left to go work for Kalen DeBoer now in Tuscaloosa. You know, Tommy Rees, former Notre Dame quarterback at OC, was set to get an interview to succeed Nick Saban before they hired Kalen DeBoer. And right now he's, you know, temporarily out of a job, but I don't think that will be for long. But there's so many domino effects of this Nick Saban movement, you know, from Washington to Arizona to San Jose State and all the coaches who are leaving for other jobs now. And I'm not sure we're going to slow down in that regard anytime soon. If and when Harbaugh leaves, that will create another domino effect because Michigan is a tremendous job. I was actually looking at this in anticipation of Harbaugh leaving. So in the 26 year era, I think, of the BCS in playoff, no coach has ever left his school immediately after making either the BCS or the playoff. We're on the brink of three of this year's four leaving their schools, including the two finalists, assuming Harbaugh leaves, which is just bananas.
Yeah, it is wild. And like, not that this was a Notre Dame link, but it was reported or tweeted to be a Notre Dame link by some national media members that Marcus Freeman was a potential option for Alabama, which never quite made sense to me. But yeah, it's just, and in terms of the multiple coaches, head coaches leaving their job to come to Alabama, multiple five-star freshmen have left Alabama to go play somewhere else.
25 players in the portal, I believe, since they left.
It is a wild, tumultuous time in college football, which is exactly how we like it. But it definitely resets sort of what, especially let's take Harbaugh out. Let's put Harbaugh in Los Angeles or Atlanta or wherever you want to.
Don't rule out Vegas with Tom Brady there.
Yes, apparently not in Dallas, which still is a bit baffling to me. But anyway, neither here nor there. I feel like it's Georgia and everybody else now. And with the college football playoff expanding to 12 teams, that's a lot of room for everybody else. I realize Ohio State should be great next year. Georgia will be great next year, but I feel very unmoored by Nick Saban not being in the sport. It's so strange to me to think that we'll be watching college football without him sort of lording over the sport. You know, he would be, you know, they've talked about a college football czar, a college football commissioner. That would be a great position for him to sort of look out for the good of the game and make recommendations on it. Obviously, he's a little bit, you know, he was doing it for his employer for the last 17 years, but to do it for the sport at large, I think would be an interesting role for him. But yeah, Notre Dame just sort of sitting there back of the top 10 in most early top 25 rankings for next year, which means that would put them in the playoff. Stu Mandel came out with one and he was asking for my feedback on who's coming back, who's leaving. And I sent it to him and he immediately replied like, this is the most optimistic you've ever been since you started like giving me feedback for this. And I'm like, yeah, I think Notre Dame should be really good next year. They need to be really good next year for Marcus Freeman in year three, but it does feel like it's a little bit more of a more open playing field in 2024 than I know it was open in 2023, but I think we're kind of moving out of this era of Clemson, Alabama, super teams. I realize Georgia is still great, but the sport doesn't feel as condensed down to two or three teams, maybe as much as it did for much of the last 10 years.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think it's a confluence of events, right? First and foremost with Nick Saban's retirement. And you look at this year in particular, that seemed like the most fun he had coaching in a while because, I mean, I was at that Texas game. I obviously saw the Michigan game up close, which they were lucky to be in, you know, as late as they were. Michigan was a better team. This was the worst Alabama team probably since 2010 or so. And for them to be an overtime away from probably winning the national championship again, I thought was very, very impressive. But you see in the aftermath of Nick Saban's retirement, how Alabama's now starting to live like everybody else, right?
Yep.
Like they were the spoiled children, understandably so, their fan base was, because they were winning at such a high level. And, you know, it's funny because I remember after the Rose Bowl, our former colleague and guest of the show, Aaron Suttles, who now works for Yeah Alabama, their collective, he filmed a video asking for NIL donations for Alabama's collective. And that thing almost went viral. They were getting killed for it. Look at Alabama begging for money after they lose to Michigan, yada, yada, yada. And I was talking to a couple of Alabama writers in the hospitality suite after that Rose Bowl. And they're like, look, Alabama fans don't like NIL. They're not used to it. Like they were good before NIL because they were winning. And now NIL has kind of been the great equalizer, at least in the SEC. And you've got to work extra hard to keep and get that talent. And so it's an acquired taste. And you're going to see Kalen DeBoer struggle with that, or whoever was taking that job struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because it is different. I thought it was very telling that Greg Byrne, the AD at Alabama, both during the intro presser and I think during his appearance with Paul Feinbaum this week, he was wearing a lapel pin with Yeah Alabama, the collective, official collective, on it. Because they're really having to sell this thing in a way that they never had to before. So that's going to be different. That's going to be an acquired taste for that fan base. But it's going to be different next year. I mean, you know, not to make you feel old, but my freshman year of college was 2007, which was Nick Saban's first year at Alabama. That's when I really fell in love with the sport and started to make a career out of this. And so I don't know a college football without Nick Saban, as far as covering it, following it religiously, and knowing sure as you're born, every time the preseason poll comes out, Alabama's going to be there in the 1, 2, or 3 spot and probably stay there till the end of the year. So that's going to be different next year. Obviously, the 12-team playoff is going to be different next year. And I think in this specific case, when you see so many people enter the transfer portal, yeah, it's going to be different. I mean, you saw it this year, a national title game with two teams that were not recruiting superpowers. I mean, Michigan's a blue blood. I get it. And they're a really good team. But I can't recall a team built the way that Michigan team was that went out there and dominated and won the national title. I mean, Clemson's a little bit similar, but they recruited at a higher level. And they did it in the pre-NIL portal era as well. For Michigan to keep these guys in bed as long as they did was different and impressive. And I think ultimately encouraging when, you know, you look at a school like Notre Dame or somewhere else that's really, really good, but not at that national championship level just yet. I think they proved, you know, there maybe is an asterisk with this. I don't want to be completely naive to everything that may have gone on there. And I think there will be a bill passed due coming eventually for that. But anyone who watched that team play after Connor Stallions got, you know, resigned, no doubt about it, that was the best team in the country. I mean, they were really, really good. And, you know, I'll mention Ohio State here as another team because they're going to be on top five, if not top three, of every preseason poll next year. They've got virtually everyone coming back other than Marvin Harrison Jr. and Kyle McCord. Ohio State, there's such a – it shows how crazy college football is and the rivalry aspect of it. You know, they lose 3 games to Michigan and the sky is falling. And I understand that. It's the biggest rivalry in sports. However, they were a missed field goal away against Georgia from probably winning the national title in 2022.
Winning, not probably winning.
Yeah, they would have beat TCU. And this year, they've got the ball down 6 at the 37, at the Michigan 37, with the best player in the country, you know, throwing the ball to him. And it gets picked off, and that's that. And the sky is falling in Columbus. You go into Ann Arbor and beat that Michigan team, knowing what we know now about how good they were. there's a better chance than not you're winning the national championship this year, in my opinion. So that program, for as depressed as everyone is there right now, was damn close to winning the national title each of the last 2 years. I think they're going to have an even better shot next year, 12-team playoff notwithstanding. But like, look, this would have been the perfect year for the 12-team playoff, right? How many teams would you be able to talk yourself into thinking they could win it all? I mean, you might go all the way down to Ole Miss and Mizzou. I don't know if it would have happened, but there are teams that would have at least thought they had a shot.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. It's just like it feels – I mean, you think back to 5 years ago where college football just felt sort of stale and stuck in place.
Felt impossible. Three of the four title games featured the same two teams.
That feeling around college football, I am convinced, is one of the reasons Brian Kelly is in Baton Rouge right now. It's because, like, he felt stuck here. And now I feel like the entire sport feels more wide open, whether that's NIL, whether that is the college football playoff expanding, Harbaugh and Saban's one impending departure, one definite retirement. But it's funny, you mentioned Michigan and Notre Dame. That was the first question in my mailbag last week. So I'm curious to hear what your feeling on it was, are there lessons that, or similarities that Notre Dame can pull from Michigan's success this year and the last couple of years that apply here? And I feel like in some ways, like, Notre Dame is already doing what Michigan has done, NIL, but more for retaining the players that you already have, trying to be as old as possible, developing both lines and leaning into that, sort of culturally aware of who you are. But I do look at the success Harbaugh had. I mean, Harbaugh is obviously at a coach different level than Marcus Freeman, but in terms of how the programs are structured, the way they use NIL, the way they use the transfer portal, it does feel a little bit similar there. I think that Michigan, if I was a Notre Dame fan, would give me a little bit more hope that, yeah, there is a way to do this, that when Alabama and Georgia were sort of like blocking everything at the top, you know, it was sort of a barricade or an embargo there. It didn't really feel as possible as maybe it does right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was different, right? I mean, this was the tail end of a three-year stretch, and I would argue, you know, the 22 team was every bit as good, if not better, and probably should have won it, or at the very least should be TCU and made the national title game. But you have to create a culture and a buy-in there. Obviously, NIL is a big part of that, but I just think it's so rare in this day and age that you see a group of high-end players run it back the way Michigan did. And they came into the season with a national championship or bust mentality, and they were very open about that. And again, say what you want about all the scandals, and some are more serious than others, and there's a lot of adults there who I think skimmed the rules and did some bad things. You talk to those players, you see those players play together and the way they act together. I mean, it was as mature of a football team as far as 18 to 22-year-olds as I can recall. I mean, it reminded me a little bit of Clemson as far as they loved playing together. Mm-hmm. They were very disciplined. They always had each other's backs. I think Cole Kubelik tweeted out the stats at the end of the year. I think they had just 5 offensive turnovers, 3 of which were in the Bowling Green game.
Yeah.
And they had 45 penalties on the year. I mean, again, they put themselves in a pretty desperate situation against Alabama, thanks to special teams. But the minute they tied that game, the minute they got that 4th-and-2, I'm on that sideline like, yeah, this game's over. They're going to win. Like, Bama couldn't put them away. And especially if it gets to overtime in that short yardage situation, that offensive line and that defense line are so damn good, they're not going to be denied. And it was just very, very impressive. And we've heard J.J. McCarthy and others say it repeatedly, like, we're not as disciplined and as mature as we are this year if we didn't have the failures of years past. And you just don't get that in this day and age of college football.
No, the shelf life is much shorter than that. And I think, like, Notre Dame is that way on defense, but not that way on offense.
I think if there's a program that could be that way, it's Notre Dame. Yeah. Because I think they're very similar.
Mills, Cross, Kaiser, yes. Xavier Watts. Like,
now, I will say that Michigan defense, and Notre Dame's is very good, top 10 unit. My God, the way they just abused Michael Penix Jr. Not just Michael Penix Jr. Washington won the Joe Moore Award this year. It's the best offensive line in the country. And anyone who watched that game knows that Michigan should have won it for a third year in a row. They just overpowered them. You talk about being an offensive line, defensive line driven program. Yes, that's what Notre Dame under Marcus Freeman aims to do. And I think they're on their way to doing that. It's establishing a consistency. It's knowing that when a Zach Zinter goes down, you're not going to miss a beat and you're still going to run the ball at will the way you did against Washington. So it was very impressive. Also, I'd be remiss not to, me and you have talked about it. I'm sure a lot of Notre Dame people have talked about it. I saw him briefly before and after the Alabama game. Mike Elson coached, I think, the best unit in the country this year. And for all the love everyone on that staff's getting right now, I'm not sure he's getting any, if nearly enough. It's funny. I thought he probably got a little bit too much love when he's at Notre Dame sometimes. I thought he was a little more out there in the public than some of the other guys on staff. But you look at Michigan is national champion right now because of that defensive line. And Mike Elson coached that defense lineup. He's been there two years. And they've been absolutely awesome. And hats off to him. He's got a national championship ring to show for it. And to see them dominate the way they did was very, very impressive.
Yeah, I totaled this up. Last seven seasons, 5 at Notre Dame, 2 at Michigan, those teams, Mike Elston was on all of those staffs. Those teams went a combined 82-11 with 4 trips to the college football playoff and 1 national championship. That's nuts. That's insane. But that is the best. I don't think there's an assistant coach in the country that could have that, would have that record. Nobody on Georgia stuck around long enough. Nobody on Alabama stuck around long enough to do it. So hats off to him on that.
One of the best parts of starting the Independent podcast was a chance to pick the brands we wanted to work with, and Rollback was at the top of my list. As the owner of multiple polos, hoodies, Q-zips, and shorts, I can tell you the quality, fit, and feel is unmatched. You've probably seen Rollback on Audric Estime, Kyle Hamilton, and Michael Mayer. Or maybe you saw the dozen Notre Dame fans wearing the Shamrock polo at the Central Michigan game last weekend. I can tell you I saw Rollback gear in Dublin earlier this year. While the gear hasn't made me quite that athletic as those Notre Dame football players, Rollback is my go-to on the golf course, heading to the lake, watching my kids' sports, or just walking the dog. So make sure you're comfortable throughout the season with Rollback. Use code IRISH for 20% off your first purchase. That's code IRISH for 20% off all hoodies, polos, Q-zips, and more.
You know, we are sort of at the list season in college football. It's not, the offseason is nothing without lists. I don't think it's a spoiler to say The Athletic will have its top 25 head coaches rankings again that Stu and Bruce do, which after the first couple of years, their criteria is you can't have a second-year coach on it. Or first year coach on it, just because there's a Freeman's lack of body of work. Now. Yeah, so Freeman maybe could be on there now. I'm not really sure. I don't think he would be. But let's remove Harbaugh, let's remove Saban. Who are your top 10 coaches in college football, and how close or far is Marcus Freeman to top 20, top 10?
So it's funny, you said remove Harbaugh and Saban. Remove Jimbo Fisher, who got fired. That's three national title-winning coaches who will not be there in 24. That means there are just three active. Dabo, who's won 2, Kirby, who's won 2, and Mack Brown, who won 1 a lifetime ago, which shows you just how hard it is to win a national championship in college football. Top 10. Well, I mean, you got to establish, like, who would I want right now? Who is a lifetime achievement award? Like, Dabo would be 1 or 2, but not based on this past 3 years.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's not a lifetime achievement award, but it is not what did you do last year and last year only. Recency bias is allowed. Like, for example,
I love Kirby 1. I mean, I'll just
Kirby is 1. I love Bruce. He's come on the show. I think that he has a blind spot for James Franklin's work.
I knew you were going to say that.
And Chip Kelly at Oregon from many years ago.
I would write. By the way, can I just say something? We always overlook Oregon, who should be really good next year. Dan Lanning's staying at Oregon, and I don't know if he was ever actually contacted by Alabama or not. I find it very interesting if you look at this. Everyone who leaves Oregon stinks.
There's something to that.
Mark Helfrich, nowhere to be found. Mario Cristobal's not getting it done at Miami through 2 years. Willie Taggart got fired at Florida State and at FAU after that. Chip struggled in the NFL and is struggling right now at UCLA. Like, that's a much better job than I think any of us have ever.
That's a good point. Yeah. So if you just went down Bruce's list, this is guys who would be active. Kirby Smart would be your new number one.
When's this from? From his last one?
This is from last year.
Okay.
So I'm just going to read them in order of guys who are still active. Kirby, Dabo, Franklin, Day, Riley, Kelly, Whittingham, Leipold, Fickell, Clausen, Kleiman, Chip Kelly is still on there, Matt Rhule, Kalen DeBoer, who is definitely top five now, Mark Stoops, Hugh Freeze, Sonny Dykes, Mike Norvell, Josh Heupel, Kirk Ferentz, Brett Bielema, Troy Calhoun. I feel like there's a pretty good argument to have Marcus Freeman in your top 25 at this point, maybe at the bottom of your top 20. But in terms of top 10, I mean, we got Smart one. I think Dabo, off a really bad year, would still be two for me.
Probably.
After that,
I put DeBoer.
DeBoer.
I put Norvell. Look what Norvell. Yeah. I mean, both of them took over terrible situations.
Yeah, I feel like with Norvell, I want to see one more year of just like 10-2. But DeBoer would be top five for me. I know Brian Kelly being a top five coach would not be a popular take on this show. I would have him in there. I think won 10 plus games each of the last 7 years. We'll see after next year, but for now, I would still have him in my top five. Whittingham would be top 10. You know, like Ryan Day.
Easily top 10. I'm sorry. Yeah,
easily top 10.
Maybe top five. Maybe.
Yeah. It's like he's fifth if he's top five. He's no higher than that.
But I think with a lot, well, I don't know. You could play. So if any of these guys resign tomorrow or got fired tomorrow, I think the ultimate test is how quickly would everyone be lined up to hire them. And I think with all those guys, everyone would.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting. Like when Harbaugh does leave, who from the list would be hireable? You know, is that, do you go with like a Leipold or?
Leipold's phenomenal. I mean, he won 9 games at freaking Kansas this year without the preseason Big 12 player of the year, Jalen Daniels. I mean, Buffalo finished ranked the only time in their history. In his last year there. And he obviously won 6 Division III national titles at Wisconsin Whitewater. I mean, that guy's unbelievable. If Michigan goes external for...
He's a less cool Kalen DeBoer, right? Like, that's...
I'm glad Kalen DeBoer finally... I'm not saying I'm glad he left Washington. I'm glad he finally got his moment in the sun and is now being recognized and treated as one of the best coaches in the country. Because the guy's over 100 games, over 500. He's absolutely killed it everywhere he's been. I think... A good percentage of his losses came in his first year at Fresno State, which was the COVID year. I've always thought if you can coach at NAIA, D3, D2, FCS, mm-hmm. you can coach anywhere. And we're seeing that with him. We're seeing it with Lance Leipold, who was the best guy there was in D3. And we're seeing it with Chris Kleiman at Kansas State, who won 4 national titles in 5 years at North Dakota State.
I mean, we saw it with Brian Kelly.
Saw Brian Kelly, yes. And I think... You know, I look at a guy like Bob Chesney, who won, I think, 5 straight Patriot League titles at Holy Cross, ended up getting the JMU job. I thought he should have got the Syracuse job or something better, but I think that's going to ultimately be one of the best hires in the country because, again, if you can do it at that level, that's coaching, and I think you could do it anywhere. So, Leipold, DeBoer, I think they're all from that same kind of profile, if you will, and people are finally starting, you know, they're not necessarily win the press conference hires. I know DeBoer is right after they make the title game, but you know, if Leipold gets hired by Michigan next week, I don't know if they'll be throwing a party in Ann Arbor, but I do think football people will recognize that that's probably the best hire you can make.
Yeah. It's, DeBoer was described as like a coach that could still walk into a Home Depot and nobody would know who it was. Obviously that's before over last now week at Alabama, but at Washington, it was 100% the truth. I think that if Lance Leipold ended up at Michigan, that would be the truth. He could go into a Lowe's in Ypsilanti and nobody would know who the heck he was. But, not true with Jim Harbaugh. I do think like Marcus Freeman is probably one playoff season away from being a solid top 20 coach on these kinds of lists. Like there's just not enough
They made a New Year's Six this year. He'd absolutely be.
Yeah, that would be it. So really, I guess he was probably one win away from that.
That's the margin year. Usually.
Yeah, that's how college football works, right?
Would you put Elko top 25?
Ooh.
I probably – I mean, I haven't gone through the entire list, but I would – I have a hard time keeping him off there.
I don't know. I mean, it's probably
– You win enough at Duke to get the A&M job, and I know A&M isn't, you know, technically a superpower, but if you win enough in 2 years there to
– Could be.
New boss there, by the way. Two new athletic directors in A&M, Notre Dame's opener next year.
Yeah.
Boss people that left for Ohio State.
What a subtext sidebar story that will be.
But I would put Franklin top 10. I you look at the body of work, it is impressive. And I know my fellow Penn State grads don't want to hear this, but as long as Michigan and Ohio State are rolling, that's always going to be no better than the third best job in the Big Ten. And if you go 10-2 every year and lose to those two, I know you want more and you should want more, but that's not a bad job. The guy's won three different New Year's Six bowl games there, and he's the only person in the history of mankind to consistently win at Vanderbilt. Hopefully our boy Clark Lee turns that around this year. But I think that's a top 10. I think he, again, the Saturday criticisms are very real and legit, but he's done a lot of good things there. And, you know, this past OC notwithstanding, he's got a hell of a coaching tree out there. Probably one of the best, if not the best in the country. When you look at guys who've worked with him, who are head coaches or became head coaches, whether it's Joe Moorhead, Charles Huff, Manny Diaz, you know, I guess technically counts this time. He's made a lot of really good hires there as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess getting a little bit more micro on Notre Dame, starting next week, Notre Dame is scheduled to sort of have three access interview sessions with, I'm assuming, players and coaches. In the past, it's sort of been, if you are new, you come out. Right. You know, that can be an early enrollee. It can be a grad transfer. It can be a new coach. It could be a new strength coach as well.
Maybe a new AD one of these days. I don't know. Maybe a new AD. Maybe we'll get to interview him.
March 25th. Don't rush it. What are you most interested to hear from Notre Dame, whether it be a person or a message? Or just like a curiosity about what the offseason looks like around here.
I want to hear from Mike Denbrock about what brought him, in his words, what brought him back to this place and what's different about this place since he was last there. I mean, I don't even think they had the indoor when he was last at Notre Dame. I mean, it's been a while. But he's obviously on his third tour of duty with Notre Dame, and I'd argue they're in the best position to see right now as they've ever been during his time here. So I'd love to hear that. I'd love to hear what he learned from being in that SEC cauldron and coaching the Heisman winner last year as well, and how any of that could possibly transfer over or apply to Notre Dame. I want to hear from Riley Leonard, because I want to hear from every quarterback who's been in the portal this year about what that's actually like and how the conversations with Notre Dame came to be. And, you know, was this always going to happen? Did this only happen because his head coach left at Duke? What do you remember about playing these guys? What's more of the similarities and differences between Duke and Notre Dame. And I want to hear from Lauren Landau because he's new. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I know much about strength training, but some of these guys, when you put them in front of the camera, I mean, they're all professional wrestlers, but some of them, Scott Cochran, you know, formerly of Alabama among them, they could really turn it on and convince us we're going to run through a wall from them. So
speaking of robots as well. yeah, no, that's Denbrock in particular, because I know it'll be a little bit of a mess with how many people want to talk to him, but I mean, he's as candid a coach as you will find at this level. So that would be interesting to me. Landau, I'm interested as well, because it's like, I don't know if you feel this way. I, you know, fans and media, I think we're very good at assessing what's right or wrong with an offensive coordinator. Less so with a defense coordinator, because nobody knows how to call defensive plays other than blitz and don't blitz. The strength coach is by far the hardest, like, position where, let me rephrase, it's the position where we are least qualified to comment on, because we don't know a damn thing about what they're doing, why they're doing it. It's all behind the scenes anyway. Very few people in the media go to the gym on a regular basis as is. But I'm just sort of curious about his philosophical approach to it. I don't need to know how much Jason Onyeka is benching or what Riley Leonard's squat is. I want to know about like how you take work with the Broncos for 4 years, but also there was like he worked with them in previous times too in the lockout time per Brady Quinn. How you sort of go from working with finished products in the NFL essentially, where you're just doing maintenance and strengthening, to finding the next freshman Mike McGlinchey and turning him into a top 10 pick. It's just it's a different set of skills, and that's not to say that he not uber qualified to do it. I just am interested to hear about his process there. So there's a lot to it. Riley Leonard in particular, I spoke with Kevin Johns, the old Duke offense coordinator and quarterbacks coach, earlier this week for a story on The Athletic today. Basically, like, tell me what Notre Dame got here. And while he likes Leonard a lot, he was pretty upfront. Like, he's still a developmental quarterback. There's a lot of growth there, which could be very good with Mike Denbrock and Gino Guidulli. Because I think that the finished product aspect with Jack Cohn and Sam Hartman before him, I'm not sure that was like an overly positive thing. Like, there just wasn't a lot of next level stuff for those guys to go to. I think Leonard has that, but the challenge is how do you get to that next level? Because Notre Dame is going to need Leonard to level up as a quarterback to make the college football playoff this fall.
Yeah. I mean, and to go back to the strength coach discussion, it's one of those ones where you only notice it when it's not working, right? Like, if they're struggling in November, as they were for a while in those later Brian Kelly years before he made all his changes, there's usually a cause and effect there.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, we don't see a whole lot. I mean, you talked to Brady Quinn, Jake Butt, former Michigan and Broncos tight end I used to do a stadium show with. He said he's the best strength coach he's ever had. He loved him. He's really excited to see him at the college level. Look, they felt the same way about Bayless too. And it's not like Bayless got fired or anything. He had to leave for other reasons, but I always get a kick out of anytime USA Today or you work for the New York Times secondly, but New York Times or someone who, has a non-sports reporter, non-college football reporter, right? Like, look how much the strength coach made this year. They made more than the OC and the DC and made more than everyone at the school other than the head coach. And I'd be like, yeah, because they are the second most important person in the building. Anyone who follows college football knows that. They have their hands on these players and have access to these players for more hours than anyone else does.
They're the head coach for 8 months of the year.
Yes. They are the eyes and ears of the entire operation. And due to a lot of outdated rules, but like, they're that important. You saw Michigan this year. I mean, Ben Herbert got all the praise of the world for the way that team finished this year. You saw it, a lot of times Alabama. I mean, the most important person in that room, not Nick Saban, was Scott Cochran. Because he was kind of the good cop to Saban's bad cop, but he's also the strength coach, the guy who helped mold these five stars into multi-millionaires at the next level. I thought that was I'm not saying they struggled during that four-night game and 4 week stretch or late in the year against Clemson because they didn't have a full-time strength coach, but you'll never convince me that didn't have some kind of negative impact. It's just, even though the bulk of the work is done in the summer and the off season, that presence that Matt Bayless carried and that others like Matt Bayless carried, it's hard to appreciate it and really understand it because we're not there every day and we don't see the workouts, but that was something I think that absolutely had to have been some sort of an issue last year with him not there.
Yeah, it's a, even though it's more, even if it's just maintenance during the season, the hamstring injuries that Notre Dame had at wide receiver that just decimated that position. That's one of those things where like, you don't know until it doesn't work. And I wrote about sort of their sports science department. Maybe the hamstrings were bad luck. Maybe they weren't, but there's just room for improvement there. From where the strength program was last year, which is, I mean, look, it's part of the reason why Marcus Freeman went out and hired somebody opposed to just promoting Hale from within. So that's that's all part of it. But I'm interested to sort of see how that approach is. I think that Freeman wanted more of maybe a modern approach, more of a professional approach than we're just going to like work our butts off and I'm going to speak in a gravelly voice all the time. Like that sort of strength coach, I don't think is who Marcus Freeman wanted in the position. And if you listen to Lauren Landau's interviews, he did a podcast. I can't remember the name of it, but it's pretty insightful about much more of a thoughtful approach to strength training than
Clark Lee of strength training.
that's probably a good way to put it. Clark Lee of strength training. So I guess that means he'll be a friend of our podcast. But that approach I think it's probably needed even more so at a place like Notre Dame, where these are all very high achieving individuals that probably don't need to be yelled at to work hard. They need to be given plans that are smarter and take advantage of their time better. And I think that's sort of where Marcus Freeman's was at with whoever the next hire was going to be.
It's interesting because you're definitely seeing that kind of cultural shift in college football in general. And I'm not saying this like I long for these days, but a lot of people at Iowa will point to Iowa's offensive line and Iowa's, you know, kind of physical struggles on that side of the ball to coincide with when Chris Doyle got let go. And obviously Chris Doyle earned his pink slip there, but you know, he was around as long as he was for a good reason. Was it Shannon Turley at Stanford with Harbaugh and Shaw? That I don't think it's a coincidence that Stanford football, the demise of that program began shortly after Turley was let go. And I'm not sure of the circumstances behind that, but you know, I remember talking to someone after the 2017 season, which was like the first makeover season with
the first coat of paint, as the head coach said at the end of that year.
Did he say
he did
in his eighth year there, or whatever it was?
Correct.
I was talking to someone there, and you know, they looked so good for so long that year. They had the Miami meltdown, they collapsed in the fourth quarter against Stanford. And it's like, all right, did they really get better or not? And you know, someone high up there said, look, like, not saying this was right or wrong, but like, these guys were freaking exhausted in November. They were not worked under Paul Longo and the previous regime the way they were under Matt Bayless and Chip Long, who would do full-on walkthroughs, you know, day before the game or morning of the game in a much more intense way than, you know, they were used to. Like, there were captains on that team going up to administrators just saying how exhausted they were. And I don't know if they were overworked. I don't know if they just weren't used to it because of what they had the year before. But whatever it was, it got ironed out the next year because they went undefeated and made the playoff.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it, as we look at Landau and wherever that goes. Like, I would think that the work they put in 2017 then benefited them in 2018. It's like, I think it's similar to if you are working, you're trying to install a playbook in year one, it's not going to be as smooth as year two. And that's not to say.
I just think though, in this case, you're not fixing something that's broken the way you were in 16. Like, you're not like the new coach coming in, tearing everything down the wall, saying, I don't care what you did before. This is what we're doing now. Like, this is a good program that is in a good place. You want to take it to the next level, but you don't want to burn what got you there.
Yeah. And that's one of the unique parts of the entire Freeman era, right? Like, very rarely do you see coaches come into situations as things are just like set up for the next guy to win. Like, all the coaching changes that I've covered at Notre Dame were not by choice. It was because the coach got fired. So this is just sort of a different set of circumstances. And like, even with Bayless, it's not like he got fired, he resigned. So that's a, like, Landau comes into a very healthy situation, a program with a healthy culture, pretty talented roster on top of that. So, I mean, we'll see how this all shakes out. But I don't know if the older players who went through 3 years of Bayless and 1 year of Hale would have a ton of insight yet on Landau. But I would be interested to hear from, you know, like a Howard Cross or a Jack Kaiser, you know, maybe Jaden Thomas to a certain extent about, all right, what's different? Because different is always painted as good in the beginning, but like, what needed to change, what could be enhanced or upgraded? I don't really know, you know, but I'm interested to sort of hear from those players about, you know, the changes and what they actually mean.
Likewise. I think looking forward to talking to all these guys the next week. So I think it's next Wednesday, the Wednesday after, and the Wednesday after, if I'm not mistaken, one of which is the old traditional signing day, which crazy that that's like not. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, that's going on. Is Notre Dame going after any of these Bama players?
Not that I'm aware of. I realize that everyone wants them to have gone after Caleb Downs. They did not have a shot there. Caden Proctor was somebody they recruited a little bit out of high school.
He's got a lot
of stuff to get worked out. Just like on a personal level. I don't think.
I assume he's going to Iowa.
Yeah, he is going to Iowa. He needs to be a big fish in a small pond, which originally he was going to Iowa until Alabama flipped him at the end. But yeah, I haven't, you know, it's like Isaiah Bond, I think they recruited, but he flipped to Texas so quickly. And like, if Downs ends up at Georgia and Bond is already at Texas, like those two schools do a good job with NIL and transfer portal recruiting as well. If you're a wide receiver, are you more interested in playing with Quinn Ewers or Riley Leonard? Like, I think it's Quinn Ewers, right? And Arch Manning after that. So,
more Arch, yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot there, but and some of the, you know, see, I don't know what week the early enrollees will come out, but I've talked to Cam Williams a handful of times, the borderline five-star receiver from outside Chicago. I've talked to CJ Carr a bunch before. I'll be interested. The CJ Carr, just because he was around for the bowl game, would be kind of interesting.
Thoughts on Michigan too.
Yes. More than half the class, I think, did early enrollment. I think it's maybe 2/3. So there'll be a lot of material to cover with those guys as well, on top of what the 8 incoming grad transfers or 8 incoming transfers.
Rod Hurd, he committed since we last.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, he's the 8th one.
Surprised some people in Northwestern. They don't think he's going to start there.
At Notre Dame?
Yeah.
Really?
I thought he was a good player. I don't know.
Yeah, he's played so well. The thing is, I wonder how many people at Northwestern understand Notre Dame's roster at safety. Because it's Xavier Watts is a star. And after that, they don't really have anybody.
Look, I think whether he starts or not, I think he's a good addition. He's a good football player who's going to, at the very least, add depth to a position that probably needs it.
Oh, but yeah.
One caught Northwestern people off guard.
The fact that he thought they were going to, he was going to stay, or the fact that
Went to Notre Dame.
Oh, okay. They saw him more as of a Michigan State type of transfer.
Probably.
Okay. That'll be interesting to see then, because it's like he was super productive last year. I think he was 3rd on the team in tackles. And when I wrote a headline for him, a Northwestern fan, for what it's worth, jumped in the comments and said, like, I realize this guy is not going to like create a lot of headlines for Notre Dame, but he is a superior player to Brandon Joseph. Much more reliable, which, you know, at the time, Brandon Joseph, you're like, whoa.
He had, 7 interceptions?
Yeah, did you see that pick against Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game? Like, he was making royalties off of that. Hurd just seems like a better version of DJ Brown. And I mean that as, like, a compliment. DJ Brown was reliable. He just was not going to make a lot of plays for you, but he knew where to be. Rod Hurd can do that for you. That's probably a pretty good take.
I mean, with the exception of Kyle Hamilton, for obvious reasons, I feel like most of the guys who have been the best DBs in Notre Dame have been guys that we were not on our radar or anyone's radar going in. I mean, Bennett Jackson was a wide receiver converted.
Yep.
Kavari Russell, starring as a freshman, was unforeseen.
He was a running back.
He was running back. Right? Yeah. Benjamin Morrison, I remember that first game against Ohio State. We're like, whoa, where did this guy come from?
He was a 4-star prospect, but like a low 4-star prospect.
I don't think he enrolled early, right? Was that part of the?
He did not enroll early. He had some injuries his senior year that not sure if he was ready to enroll early. I'm trying to go like Harrison Smith was a 4-star prospect that moved to linebacker and then moved to safety. Obviously, he turned out okay.
Ignata had the kind of senior awakening.
Yeah, I mean Xavier Watts was a receiver, moved to safety. And he was so good at safety that they moved him to linebacker before moving him back to safety.
Great welcome back video, by the way.
You like the old Western?
I liked it. You're in El Paso. You might as well take advantage of.
Yeah, no, they definitely around was location appropriate for sure. But yeah, it's, I mean, it's a developmental position in some ways. Like they haven't, Notre Dame is not going out and signing Patrick Peterson or Derek Stingley II, or, you know, that's just not the kind of player that they get. But they've done a nice job developing the players that they do. And then, you know, lo and behold, this season, you have Xavier Watts and Ben Morrison are two great developmental stories. I think Christian Gray could be one. You know, Jaden Mickey, Rod Hurd, like it's a, could be a good, a very good secondary. You know, but say Rod Hurd would be another guy who'd come in. RJ Oben, like, but the coming to Notre Dame, the fact that I'm curious how much his dad, Roman Oben, was teammates with Howard Cross II with the Giants. I don't know if you remember them. You need to pull out your Giants hat if you can find it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of, if you want to also feel old, Notre Dame is hosting a junior day this weekend. And one of the players visiting is Elijah Barres.
Plaxico?
Plaxico's kid.
Your best friend.
Yeah.
Remember you guys were Twitter buddies?
Oh, you remember that. Yeah.
He would always tweet at you like you were the Notre Dame official account and talk smack at you.
We've fallen out of touch since, but maybe we'll have to reconnect. Yeah.
That'll be a fun reunion.
Yeah. So plenty
of... Well, Plaxico's not... I mean, he's been retired for a while, right? He's not...
Yeah, tired. I was surprised that he was 46, so he's the same age as me. I remember him when... I thought that he was much younger than he was, but...
I saw Ken Griffey's kid just transfer to Boise State, and I was like, okay. But he's also not that young either.
Yeah. No, it's plenty of interesting names popping through.
I guess all this means is that whoever succeeds Marcus Freeman will probably be Bill Belichick, Bill Parcells, or Tom Coughlin. Get the whole game back together from all the Giants glory years.
You could do worse. You could do worse. But yeah, that's Matt and I will be back with many episodes of The Independent this off season. We've got, I think, you know, maybe we can do one together in person whenever you're out for access. Hop around. You can also have the Frank Sinatra background.
I meant like a live show, but yeah, I could come.
Yeah, we can do that too. we could probably find a better spot than my dining room table for a live show. But yeah, we should do something this spring. You know, plenty of episodes of The Independent to come. Hopefully maybe some guests as well. Now that they're in the off season, Notre Dame might be a little bit more, less schedule crunched to find some. So that could be fun too. But, Matt, if you're good, we can wrap up there.
I'm good. Just a quick note. Thank you to everyone who reached out after the passing of my father. It meant a lot to me. Yeah, thank you for bearing with me during this little delay, and, appreciate all the kind words and support from Notre Dame Nation.
Yeah. It was fantastic. You mentioned the New York Times earlier, story about your dad and the one on eater.com. I loved too. I mean, it's what a man of the world, like literally a man of the world. It was,
I get that Shamrock Series in Italy. Go full circle.
Seriously, in his honor, that would be fantastic. Yeah, that was good. I'm glad you're back. And yeah, the Independent is back up and running here with the off season. So until our next episode, he's Matt, I'm Pete. Thanks for being with us on this episode of The Independent.